Mrs. Cuttrell 1. Whereabouts were you born, please?
In Menston in Wharfdale. The map.
What did your father do for a living?
He was a wool merchant.
Did you go to school in Menston?
No, because we moved when I was 4, and I went to school in Ilkley first.
How old were you when you left school?
Oh, Lord. I think I was 16. I left slightly early because my father died suddenly, and it just happened at that time, as so often does, that the wool trade goes up and down. It was at a down time, and as I was away at school, they felt they couldn't afford it, so I left.
So this was about 1934?
Yes.
Did you get a job or not?
No. My mother insisted that I went to the Leeds Domestic College to learn cookery and housewifery, which I did. Then I had a short time at home because I wanted to do horses, and I went to Ross-on-Wye to do the course in instructor of the Institute of the Horse, it was in those days, which I did the following year.
What were you doing when war broke out?
I was staying with my sister in Nunmonkton, having had a season's hunting there, and I was going back to Scotland to do more riding, more experience, and with a view to going into more competitive riding.
What was your reaction when you heard the news that we were at war with Germany?
Well, I think we were all dismayed. Although we were expecting it, it was more or less, good gracious me, what's going to happen now? You know, that sort of attitude.
Did you think it was going to be a long war or a short one?
Oh no, I didn't think about that sort of thing at all. My immediate reaction, in fact, was that I must join something.
Why was that your reaction?
I wanted to do something towards, it sounds, help, I suppose. You know, I wanted to be in at the sharp end.
Out of a sense of patriotism?
Yeah, I think it was the way we were brought up. You know, you must, if you're going to do anything, go and do it properly. Get in to the right.
How did you go about it?
Well, the next day, which was Monday, I went to York to see the ATS section, and was told that I wasn't needed, thank you very much, try the Air Force. So we went straight over to Yeadon, and I went to ask about it. And when I came out, I was in, is all I can say. I had my medical and signed on for 4 years, and I was an MT driver, and that was that. Go home for a week, they said, and we'll send for you when we want you.
And they sent for you in October 39?
No, it was the end of September, I think. And I was told to report at Yeadon.
What happened to you once they sent for you?
Well, I went straight to Yeadon. They told us to come with a pillow, laced up flat shoes, and sufficient clothing, you know, to keep us through. And that's what we did. We turned up and there were all these excited young women all wondering what was going to happen next. Hardly wait to start. And we hadn't a clue about what we were expected to do.
What were you expected to do?
Well, at that particular stage, we were expected to learn to march and keep our quarters clean. And very little else, really. We had to do cookhouse duties and things like that. I mean, we were the lowest of the low, ACW2s.
How did you all get on together?
Very well. We were excited. I can't exactly explain it. It was something quite different from anything any of us ever done before. And we were excited. It was something new and adventurous. We didn't think about the actual war.
Did the women come from a variety of backgrounds?
Yes, they did. A great many of them were ex-public school because they were the ones without jobs, a lot of them, you know, and so they came. But we had all sorts.
How were you treated by those in charge?
As little girls, actually. You will do as I say and keep your mouth shut.
How did that go down with the girls?
Well, we didn't mind. We were there, you know, we thought it was funny, actually. But we were there to learn discipline, you see, and we'd had it at school and at home. So it really wasn't anything strange. The girls who'd been away at school were better equipped, I mean, because they'd been away from home before. The ones who hadn't were very homesick at first.
Did that include you?
No, because I'd been away at school. No, it was an adventure to us at this stage.
And then you became an MT driver?
Not at Eden. There wasn't any transport, so we just cleaned and cooked and did drill. And we certainly knew our drill by the time we left there.
Any other incidents that happened at Eden that you recollect?
Yes, we used, there weren't any baths, so we had to go to the officers' mess once a week to have a bath, if we were lucky. But most of us lived near, so when we were off duty, we nipped home. And we had dances. And it was exciting.
Where did you become the MT driver?
I was posted to Debden. Well, in fact, I wasn't posted to Debden to start with. 8 other girls were posted to Debden. And as I wasn't going, I went home for the day. And when I came back, my friend, who came from Harrogate, said she'd got my posting changed and did I mind? And I said, not at all. So we set off for Debden the next day. And it took us all day to get there on trains. And we were thoroughly depressed by the time we got there because it was raining and it was dark and we were hungry and tired and, you know, we're taken in these big Albions up to the camp and given supper and taken round. Our quarters were to be airmen's married quarters and it was 3 to a house. So we were just dumped inside and sort of left. And we thought, oh my God, you know, what have we done? This is awful. But anyway, next day, it was a gorgeous sunny day and we were taken to the MT yard where we were greeted by the MT officer with open arms. And he said, right, into these lorries, girls, and get driving. And we were given tuition on these big lorries because none of us had driven a lorry before, especially with gate gears. And so we were told what to do with them and then sent off to drive for an hour, see how we got on, which was all right.
Is Debden in Essex?
Yes. Near Saffron Walden, a fighter station.
And once you'd learned, what then did your duties become?
Well, we drove, for a start, we drove everything from the Queen Mary's down. And
what's a Queen Mary?
Oh, it's a long low loader, 60-foot long articulated lorry that they took aircraft pieces about on. We drove off camp to other places. Winifred and I often went to Filton with stern frames from Blenheim's. Or we went to the forward station, which was Martlesham, with spares and pilots and one thing and another. And we drove coal lorries and the rubbish van and you name it, we drove them all. And tractors. And we helped to lay the flare path. We took the chance light out and put it where we were told and took the goosenecks along and dropped them where we were told to drop them. And, in fact, thoroughly enjoyed it.
Had they had WAFs at Debden before your lot arrived?
There were some. I can't remember how many. There were several NCOs and two WAF officers. There must have been about 100 of us, I should think, and we've gradually increased from that.
How did the men and women get on with each other in those days?
Very well. The men treated us with respect, which might sound funny these days. They were a bit dubious about us doing some of the jobs we'd come to do. But we were accepted and helped, and they treated us very well indeed.
What jobs were they dubious about?
Well, they were a bit dubious about us driving lorries for a start. The other jobs were clerks, cooks, waitresses, and a very peculiar thing, we had no idea what it was, special duties, and nobody knew they were plotters and we didn't know what they were.
Was there any problem with the lorry driving job?
None whatsoever. We had a wonderful officer, Flight Lieutenant Frost, and all the drivers were very helpful. They always helped us, and if we couldn't start one, because we had to swing them, there were no self-starters, we had to swing them, and they taught us how to do that without breaking our thumbs. And if we had trouble, they always came and helped.
Swinging with a starting handle at the front.
Yes, that's right.
And at first, this was the phony war, so
yes.
It was peaceful.
It was. So we had a lovely time. I mean, well, there were dances in our mess. There were sergeant's mess dances, which we went by special invitation. We used to go to Saffron and Cambridge and London sometimes. It was really...
When did things start to hot up from a military point of view?
We did have our squadrons were operating a bit. We had two that went to France, 85, and 17 went to... Oh, I'm not sure about 17. No, they don't think they did. But we did have squadrons went to France, and they also were doing convoy duty. Not a lot at that time, but they were doing some. And then, when it got round to Dunkirk, then we were really operating.
What do you remember happening then?
They were going and coming all the time, and we were told that we had to prepare the hangars for a lot of troops to come. In fact, they never did, you know, to bed them down, because they didn't know how they were going to cope with it all. And by this time, though, we'd changed our jobs. The CO had said that he wanted us to be plotters. Well, we didn't know what that was, and Winifred and I decided that we'd do it, and the other girls said they weren't going to. And so the CO posted us all to think about it, or detached us, really, he didn't post us. And Winifred and I decided that we'd do it, so we rang up the flight sergeant, Bill Wilcosen, and said we'd like to do it, so we came back, because we'd been in Duxford. And the very next day we went down our particular hole, which is in fact above the ground, and learnt plotting.
These are the radar plots?
Yes.
What did it involve?
Well, we all sat round a map on a slope, on a tilted table, which was tilted towards a balcony, which had the controller and Ops B and several other people up there. And we were all told to sit round, put on our headphones, and how to plot that we had these counters, arrows they were, in red, yellow and blue, and that they had to come off every 5 minutes, and we had a clock on the wall with 5 minutes in colours, and when the colour changed, you took your old plots off. And you had a little block which you put in the height of the aircraft and how many there were, 40 plus or whatever it was. These were exercises at this stage, And the Observer Corps, that's right, they gave us dummy runs. And we did this for about, oh, I can't remember now, probably about a week or something. And it was simply a case of getting quick and accurate, because you went along the map, along the grid, and up the stairs, and that's where your plot was. You were told the first numbers and then the second lot, and that's how you knew exactly where to put them and which way your arrow was facing, which is which way it was going. And then after that, we were then given our permanent slots to sit in, as you always did. We were B-Watch, and I was RDF-1 in the bottom right-hand corner, and Winifred was RDF-2 up in the top right-hand corner. And that was our permanent place.
What is the Ops B?
He was the assistant to the controller. He dealt with... I can't really remember. He helped him anyway. I've forgotten what he did, you know. Awful.
Were there any problems in doing the job?
None whatsoever. We had a WAF corporal who oversaw us to see that we all behaved. And because before the battle really got started and the preliminaries to that, we had long times when we were just sitting, really, not doing much. And of course at night there wasn't a lot to do because we didn't operate at night, but we were always there. There was always a 24-hour watch.
So when Dunkirk time came, the air operations must have appeared quite clear and comprehensible to you.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And because I was RDF-1, I was in direct contact with 11 Group headquarters. And you could hear, and I always say this, you could hear the aircraft taking off in France. What I mean is that you could hear the teller say there's an aircraft have taken off in France and they're coming this way, and I was, you know, I could hear it. But we used to watch to see which way they were going, and if they were going straight along the channel, then we didn't actually put them on the board. It's when they turned our way that we did, because it was the duty of some other people to deal with it if it went along the channel out of our area. Unless fighter command rang through and had aircraft put up into the air.
Where was 11 Group HQ? Duxford?
No, it's just outside London. Oh, upward? No.
Upminster?
No, just outside London, you know.
Doesn't matter, anyway.
No, it doesn't.
What impression did you get of the course of the Battle over France?
Well, from the you see, you had two. You could hear two things. You could hear what was on the wireless. I mean, the RT radio telephony, and then the orders that went out. You could hear the pilots talking to each other, and you could also hear what you were being told. So you got. It was like having a running commentary on the battle. It made us, you got very anxious for our people.
Did it seem to be a disaster from our point of view?
No, it didn't. And the thing is that once Dunkirk was, the feeling was that, oh good, now we're on our own, we'll manage. Which of course was probably very stupid. But that's our feeling. We had a feeling of elation that we were by ourselves and we could do our own thing.
So a feeling of relief that we didn't have any allies?
Yes. Rather stupidly, probably.
Some people have mentioned that the army claimed that the RAF wasn't there at Dunkirk.
They did.
Did you come across that at the time?
I did indeed. We all did.
Who they said that to you?
Well, various members of the army. I mean, they were very angry about it. And I It was later on, much later on, when I went back to MT, I was taking some spares across to Martlesham in rather a hurry. I had a quick chit, and it meant I didn't have to hold on to keep into the down my speed down. And a red cap stopped me, who was extremely angry, and he was awful, really. And even he said, "No bloody use, you RAF, never, you weren't there when we wanted you," and all the rest of it. But of course we were fighting further back.
Did you say that to
Yeah, I
him?
did. I said, "Yes, but our aircraft, they were up." I said, "They were definitely there, and they were fighting further back to try to stop the Germans getting to the beaches, because we knew where they were. With being in the plotting room, you see, we knew where they were."
Are there any specific incidents that stick out in your mind from the Dunkirk days?
Just that it was a desperate, anxious time, I think, and we were working very hard because our pilots were working very hard, and they were dead beat. They were really tired. And the ones that were in France were coming back. They had no kit, they had nothing. And yes, 17 Squadron were over there, because I remember they came back via Guernsey, I think it was Guernsey. It was one of the Channel Islands anyway. And Birdie, who was one of the pilots, now Air Vice Marshal Bird Wilson, took his wireless out. And brought home a girl who wanted to escape to England. Packed in, and several of them had some adventures of one sort and another, but they all got back all right.
Was he flying a Hurricane?
Yes, they were Hurricanes.
Do you remember any other individual pilots from those days?
Well, I remember all of them, really. Oh, no, that's not true, because you do forget some. I remember all the ones I knew well.
Any other names that particularly stick out in your mind?
Well, there was Dennis Whistler, who was my fiancé later. There's Peter Townsend, and oh, lots of them, really. I mean, you name them, we knew them all.
Any specific memories of Peter Townsend?
Well, not one I want to put on there, really. He was an extremely nice man, very shy, didn't speak to us often. But Dennis told me later, he said they were all amazed, because he didn't really speak to women much, and they'd had a party with women in the mess. You'll probably have to eliminate this. And he'd gone into another room with this woman that he hadn't known very long, came out engaged, and nobody could believe it. They were absolutely shattered. That was his first wife, of course.
Did you know her?
No, I didn't. I never. And to my memory, I didn't meet her. But you see, we used to go out with the boys. They used to ask us out for dinner. And so we knew them all very well, really.
Whereabouts did you normally have dinner?
Well, we either had it in Cambridge, Dennis and Birdie and Winifred and I went to Bishop Stortford once to have it, and there were various places, and in Saffron we sometimes went. The Rose and Crown, which doesn't exist anymore, it was burnt down, we weren't allowed to go in, but when I was engaged to Dennis, he said, "If I want to take you, I'm going to take you," and he said, "I'm taking you there," and he did. Although I was still an ACW one.
Who was banned from the Rose and Crown?
Well, it was
Non-officers
simply,
or?
no, the other ranks were banned from it.
What about casualties to the squadrons?
Yes, we did have quite a lot of casualties. Now I can't remember who they were, I'm afraid. Some of them, you see, they were only there for a short time. We lost one, two, I think three COs of 17 Squadron. And I knew them better because Birdie and Dennis were 17 Squadron, you see. Oh, there were a lot of casualties, which we found extremely grieving, of course.
Now, after Dunkirk, can we go on to your memories from the Battle of Britain period, please?
Yes, well, we worked as plotters in four-hour watches with one of, I can't remember whether it was 6 or 8 hours at night. I think it must have been 8 at one period. So that the one watch got longer. You could have a full night in bed, one night in three. Or what amounted to a full night in bed. I can't just remember how the watches worked. It was 4 hours on and 2 off, you see, for part of it. It's such a long time ago. Ought to look it up in my notes, you know.
Doesn't matter.
But that was quite, and we did work hard, and we all got very tired. Everybody got tired because everybody worked very hard. The ground crews worked round the clock. They were fantastic. The pilots got absolutely exhausted, but everybody was keen to. It sounds terrible to say this, and everybody wanted to do their best, and did so. I mean, we never thought about it. We just did it. We didn't have to be asked. We just did it. And of course, because we could hear all the battles and all that happened in them, it could be quite traumatic when you knew who it was. You didn't always know who actually was flying what, because they flew blue two, green one, you know, and things like that. You didn't know who was what unless you recognised their voices. And so, to us, it was a very anxious period. Especially when they were shouting at each other and saying, you know, look out, there's so-and-so on your tail, or so-and-so's gone down. It could be very, very traumatic. And one morning, Winifred and I were going on duty about 8 o'clock. Well, for the 8 o'clock changeover, and the CO was just in front of us going across the parade ground, and the sirens went. So we all took to our heels as though we had mad dogs after us and shot into the ops room just before the door shut. There was a steel door which clanged to and was kept shut throughout whatever happened. And we'd hardly changed over the watches, and we were attacked, and we were bombed quite heavily that day.
What damage was done?
There was quite a lot of damage done. There was a direct hit on one of the shelters, and some people were killed in that, including WAF. But we had surprisingly few casualties from it. It was quite surprising. But I'm afraid the actual station was in a bit of a mess when we came out.
Did you see the planes that carried out the attack?
No, we were inside by then and plotting like mad. And our squadron was all taking off because it was a late warning. And they were taking off into the attack and fighting as they went, you see. It was all over very quickly. An air raid is never long when it's a special target. It's a few minutes and then they've gone.